This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. President Obama and House Speaker Boehner had a rare one-on-one meeting at the White House. Michigan Democrat John Dingell has announced he's retiring after nearly 60 years in the House of Representatives, and his wife may take his place. And new polling shows U.S. Senator Mitch McConnell is facing tough odds of being reelected. It's our monthly chat with political junkie Ken Rudin, and today we also have a special guest for our junkie show, NPR's national political correspondent Mara Liasson. You can join the conversation. Our number is 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. And Ken Rudin will have a trivia question. We're going to do that here probably in about 15 to 20 minutes, so stay tuned for that. Mara and Ken, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Well, let's start, Mara, with you. President Obama and House Speaker John Boehner had a sit-down face-to-face meeting at the White House. It seemed like there was a little talk before it happened, and then we didn't seem to hear a lot after it happened. Was that your sense?
Yes, and that's probably because there wasn't really much to talk about. The Speaker and the President, you know, had tried several times over the past couple of years to come to a grand bargain about the budget, about entitlements and tax reform, something that would put the country on a more sustainable fiscal path, and they failed. And this year, I think both leaders have decided to do very little. They're focused on the election. They don't want any issues that are divisive for each of their parties. The Speaker decided not to push for immigration, and the President has kind of pushed trade at least back after the next election. So there wasn't too much to talk about. This is not going to be a kind of Ronald Reagan, Tip O'Neill partnership.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, you know, it used to be when Tip would come down the avenue to the White House, I mean, something they would sit and talk and something would happen.
But, yeah, well, that's not the case here because they did try in the future. And I think that the two men themselves would been happy to make a number of deals. But we're living in an era where leadership isn't what it's cracked up to be or what it used to be. And, you know, Bill Clinton was in Kentucky the other day, and he said being president is like being the superintendent of a very large cemetery. There are a lot of people under you, but no one's listening.
Yeah.
That's kind of what both of them are dealing with.
Yeah. All
right. Ken, what's your take on the sit-down with President Obama and Speaker Boehner?
Well, I never thought I'd say these words in my life, but I agree with Mara. And I think the reason I say that is because, first of all, everybody's looking at 2014. And yes, there is a clamoring for something to be done on immigration. And yes, there's a clamoring, certainly for coming from the White House, that something should be done on trade. But neither party wants to expose fissures in its own ranks. The last thing the Republicans want to do is focus on the differences about immigration, whether there should be a pathway to legal status or whether it's amnesty. And, of course, the same thing is going on the Democratic side regarding trade. But at the same time, the Republicans would be very happy to just sit back and focus on President Obama's poor numbers and focus on the problems with the Affordable Care Act, which still are there, whether, you know, the website is fixed or not. And then the Democrats will say, look, you know, nothing is going to get done in Congress, but maybe we can still talk about raising the minimum wage and income inequality and things like that. So both sides, I mean, I agree with Mara completely. President Obama and Speaker Boehner would love to get something done, but ultimately the two parties are talking past each other.
And Speaker Boehner obviously still, you know, he doesn't want to stir up any more trouble with the Tea Party wing.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, we saw what happened a few weeks ago when they brought out this trial balloon, basically of a working paper about moving to legal status for the 11.5 million people here who are here illegally, and they thought that, you know, given the fact that the Senate passed a big immigration bill last June, that the House would follow. But then there was an eruption among his fellow Republicans saying that, you know, every time we have a Republican who comes out in favor of some kind of an immigration reform, that's immediately a Tea Party candidate comes out of nowhere and starts threatening a primary challenge. And Boehner says the last thing we need is to just expose those fissures.
And that just means that the issue is dead in this session.
Well, it could be dead. I mean, of course, everybody says you can't do anything with an election coming up. But as we keep saying over and over again, there's always an election coming up. And now they're saying, well, maybe we'll do this after the 2014 midterm elections during the lame duck session in November or December. But that, you know, that remains to be seen.
Mar, go ahead.
Yeah, there is a school of thought in the Republican Party that says, well, why not do it in 2015 when we have a majority in the Senate, or at least more senators? We can rewrite the bill to our liking. But then you're running smack into the presidential primary season when you've got the Republican base having a pretty loud voice in states like Iowa and South Carolina. But I think that the idea of doing it in the lame duck is pretty problematic because it's not a must-pass piece of legislation like you could argue that the trade bill is, or the budget, or
the debt ceiling, right?
Yeah, this one is very optional, and it's extremely divisive for the Republican Party. And what's interesting is that after the 2012 elections, the RNC produced its autopsy report, where it made only one policy recommendation, which is that the party embrace comprehensive immigration reform. They still haven't figured out how to do that without alienating their conservative anti-amnesty base. They've got to figure out a way to reach out to the fastest growing block of the electorate, which is Hispanic voters, without causing problems for themselves with their base. Marco Rubio tried, kind of ran into a buzzsaw, and I heard the latest poll in Iowa has him at 2%. And he was once the savior of the Republican Party, according to Time magazine.
And didn't Speaker Boehner hire somebody on his staff to specifically work on this issue?
Mm, yeah.
I don't know if she came from Rubio's staff, but she came from the Senate. And so that's why people thought, he's going to try again. Hope springs eternal. Even after he had said, nope, we're not going to do immigration reform this year, he hired, I think it was called Rebecca Talent. I'm going to be corrected, I'm sure. But he did hire this very experienced immigration staffer. He came up with a set of principles that he presented at the Republican retreat. And one of the principles was, instead of a path to citizenship for illegal workers in this country, there would be legalization, not ruling out citizenship. But he thought maybe that would help. And surprisingly enough, the White House and immigration reformers didn't balk at that. They thought that was a pretty good compromise. And optimism kind of sprung again that maybe this could get done this year. But then his base kind of rose up and told him nothing doing. So he shelved it again.
Do we expect the president is supposed to release his budget next week. Any surprises expected when that is released?
Well, you know, I'm sure there'll be some new programs we don't know about, but they have been briefing people on what's in it. And one of the first things they said is that he's no longer going to include entitlement cuts in his budget. He had put as an olive branch to the Republicans in his last budget what's known as chained CPI. It's kind of a technical term, but it would slow the rate of growth in entitlement benefits, Social Security and Medicare. And that was something the president said he was willing to do if and only if Republicans agreed to close tax loopholes and raise revenue through the tax code that way. Republicans said, no, we don't want to do that. So he said, okay, well, I'm going to take my olive branch off the table. That doesn't mean I'm not willing to do the deal. But he's now producing what the White House says is a more traditional budget, which is an aspirational budget, an ideal view from the White House of how the government should tax and spend. They're not going to put a kind of negotiating sweetener into the budget. So that's one thing we know. We do know he is going to propose about $56 billion in new spending for things, his priorities. We know what they are: universal pre-K, infrastructure projects, manufacturing hubs. And that $56 billion will be fully paid for through what the Republicans will see as tax hikes. And, you know, that's one of the things they'll be arguing about this year.
Ken, your take, you suspect any surprises in the budget next week?
No, I agree. I think that President Obama, if you buy the White House argument, President Obama has been reaching out to the Republicans for a long time to get nothing in return. And, of course, with a restless base, and also with nervousness about 2014 and how the Affordable Care Act is still playing, he is just reaching out to people who have been going, you know, doing everything they can to defend him. And he's saying, okay, I'll just say the things that are pleasing, you know, to the party and give up this illusion about working with Republicans since they don't want to work with me anyway. So, of course, it makes the breach between the two parties even greater. But many in the both parties will say, well, that was inevitable, considering that neither side wants to bend all along.
Yeah, but you know, the Republicans are definitely more divided than the Democrats right now. It's interesting. The Republicans are more divided. They're facing a tougher time nationally as a party, but they're in the better position for 2014. The issue that divides Democrats mostly is trade. And it's not as divisive as immigration, but it's the kind of thing, you know, you hear Harry Reid saying, don't bring this up now. This is very divisive for our party. That's the kind of thing maybe that you could bring up in a lame duck session or next year when there are more Republicans.
Why are they in a better position for 2014?
Oh, my goodness. Well, because the map favors Republicans. Yeah. When you look at the map, right. I mean, first of all, the House isn't going to change hands. Nobody thinks it will. The House is going to be pretty static. But the big prize this year is the Senate. Control of the Senate hangs in the balance. And when you look at the map, they're one-third of the Senate is up every 2 years. This particular group of senators just leans Republican. I mean, the places the Democratic incumbents are fighting for their lives are very red states. They're states Obama lost. They're states that, with very, very few exceptions, they're states where his approval rating is much lower than it is nationally. Nationally, he's in the low 40s. In states like North Carolina, Louisiana, Arkansas, and Alaska, he's in the 30s.
In addition to the three open seats, which
are Montana, South Dakota, and West Virginia, which people consider to be excellent, excellent pickup possibilities for Republicans, if not guaranteed. So you've got the three open red states where Democrats are retiring. You've got four very vulnerable red state Democratic incumbents. Then you have Republicans hopeful to make other states competitive. Michigan, Iowa, Colorado, New Hampshire. They even talk about Oregon. Mm-hmm. So that's a very big pool for the Republicans to fish in for the net six pickups they need to take control.
Let me just say one thing, because if they do take control, of course, they need a net gain of six. And that is a tall order. We kept saying in 2012 that the Republicans had the numbers in their favors and they didn't deliver. But even, let's just say for argument's sake, they do it in 2014, their time in the majority could be very, very short, because in the 2016, I can't believe we're talking about 2016 already for the Senate, but that 2016 class will be the senators who were elected in that big Tea Party wave in 2010. So for all we know, the great numbers that favor the Republicans in 2014 could disappear in 2016.
What do you make of the Senate race in Kentucky? There was some polling that came out earlier this month. It was a poll conducted by some media organizations in Kentucky. And Allison Lundergan Grimes had a small lead over U.S. Senator Mitch McConnell.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say quickly, I think even more important than those numbers, and those numbers do show like that the race is all about Mitch McConnell, who's been there forever, but that the argument for Mitch McConnell in another term was always that President Obama is so unpopular in Kentucky, and he seems to be so unpopular in Kentucky, but so is Mitch McConnell. What was striking to me about that poll is that both President Obama and Senator McConnell had dismal reelection or dismal job approval numbers. And you'd think that in a state, you know, I mean, basically, and these two guys have nothing alone. They are nothing alike, and yet both of them are in big, big trouble with the regular electorate.
Well, this is what Tea Party challenger Matt Bevin has just been hammering at us. You know, do you want to nominate a guy who's been around for 30 years who has these abysmal numbers?
Yeah, well, I think Matt Bevin has an uphill climb, but he is certainly softening up Mitch McConnell. Mm-hmm. I think what's interesting about Kentucky, there's no doubt it's a competitive race. Mitch McConnell is very unpopular, but it is a really, really red state. It's one of those states where President Obama can't go into the state to campaign personally and help Allison Lundergan Grimes, the Democrat. Instead, you saw yesterday Bill Clinton, the big dog of the Democratic Party, campaigning for her. He obviously is still popular in Kentucky. But even though Kentucky and Georgia are the two states where Democrats hope they can pick up seats. It's going to be very difficult. Mitch McConnell is unpopular, but he is a very, very able politician. And, you know, it would be an amazing feat if she defeated him.
Well, he's a bare knuckles campaigner. I mean,
there's no doubt about that.
At nothing. Yeah.
Is this a make or break year in these midterm elections for the Tea Party?
That's a good question. I mean, the Tea Party itself is unpopular, And Tea Party candidates have been struggling this year in some of these primaries. The Republican Party, the Republican establishment, has decided to kind of put the Tea Party in its place because they don't want candidates that are not ready for prime time to win these primaries. You saw the Republican Party snatch defeat from the jaws of victory in 2010 and 2012. They should have picked up the Senate then, and they both those times, and they didn't. They lost races they should have won. But what you haven't seen this year yet is because we haven't had the primaries yet, but in an incumbent Republican senator being knocked off in a primary by a Tea Party candidate. In Indiana last time, Richard Lugar was defeated by a Tea Party-backed candidate, and that is why, in the end, the Republicans lost Indiana, a seat they certainly should have kept. It's a very bright red state.
Can make or break for the Tea Party this year?
Well, I guess so. I mean, you know, Mar was right that they, you know, once upon a time when the Tea Party made its big stand in 2010, their focus of disenchantment was President Obama and the Democrats. In recent times, and including 2014, the Tea Party is talking more about fellow Republicans, the establishment Republicans, the so-called rhinos. The thought of John Cornyn of Texas or Lindsey Graham of South Carolina or Pat Roberts of Kansas being a rhino is just beyond the pale, but they just feel that if you're not ideologically pure, you're not standing up for the constitutional principles of the Tea Party. And so they will go after the Lamar Alexanders and the Lindsey Grahams and the you know, Mitch McConnells and the John Cornyns, and talk less about unseating Democrats in Democratic states. So, you know, we keep saying that the Tea Party is dismissed and it's on its last legs, but I wouldn't count them out at all. And again, you know, who were the leading candidates for president in 2016? They may no longer be the so-called moderates of the Chris Christie wing of the party, and it may be the Ted Cruz's. And there's no question that Ted Cruz is running for president. He may have a minority of the party, but if you have five or six Republicans, you know, running for the nomination, you know, we've seen sneak out victory.
Mara, we know your time is limited. Is there anything you want to add to our conversation here before we let you go? Any parting thoughts?
Well, I guess what's interesting to me, just picking up on this point that Ken made about how as good as the map is this year for Republicans, it's even better for Democrats in 2016 for the Senate. And what I think is so kind of ironic is that the Republicans have really profound problems as a party. They've lost five out of the last six elections in the popular vote. Their base of electoral votes, I think, is something like 102 votes, 13 states that have gone Republican in the last five out of six elections, where Democrats start with 242 electoral votes in a presidential year. States, 18 states plus the District of Columbia, that have gone Democratic every year, five out of the last six elections. So they have these incredible problems as a national party, but they're feeling so confident because this year is such a great year for them. And that's what I think is so interesting. And I think the fact that they are poised to do so well in 2014 could lead them to think that their problems are not so bad and to kind of not deal with them, not deal with the problems that the emerging electorate, which is younger and browner and more female, is just not hospitable to them. That's what I think is pretty interesting.
You know, Mara, it's interesting because we talk about this almost Democratic lock on the Electoral College. It wasn't that long ago we were talking about the Republican lock.
We're old enough to remember that.
Oh, yeah.
We're old enough to remember that. But yes, yeah. That's what's really interesting. So, you know, I think they will do really well. And I think if they do get control of the Senate, the president will have a real miserable final 2 years. But all of that could be completely reversed and more in 2016.
Well, Mara, we appreciate you joining us this afternoon as we talk politics with Ken Rudin.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be with you. Last time I had the pleasure of being there in person.
And yes. I think you actually sang a happy birthday to Ken Rudin on the phone, correct?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
But that wasn't on the air, was
that
it?
That wasn't on the air, no.
I hope not, for your listeners' sake.
We are talking politics today with political junkie Ken Rudin. And again, thanks to NPR's national political correspondent Mara Liasson for joining us for a part of today's show. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. Political junkie Ken Rudin joining us today, as he does once a month, to talk politics. And again, you can join our conversation, 513-419-9231. 7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. And keep that number handy because you're going to need it because, Ken, I'm told you have a very difficult Ohio political question today.
Well, I'm tired of me giving the easy ones. I mean, every time, you know, Howard says he gets the answer, basically Howard figures out the answer before I read the question. So something is up. There's something fixed with what's going on here. But this is a tough one. Are we ready for this one?
Yes, okay. Go ahead.
Go.
Okay. Well, we do know that Governor John Kasich was born in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
So, but before that, who was the last governor of Ohio who was not born in Ohio? And I'll give us a second question as well. Who was the last Ohio senator who was not born in Ohio?
So the last Ohio governor not born in Ohio and the last Ohio senator not born in Ohio.
Right, prior to John Kasich, of course, who was born in Pennsylvania.
Well, Howard was waving his hand when you said the governor one, so he must have
that one. I got one. I'll think about the other one.
And while he thinks about that, I'll get on Google and search up both answers. Well, that's where we're waiting. Again, if you know the answer, the last Ohio governor, besides John Kasich, not born in Ohio, and the last Ohio senator, not born in Ohio, 513-419-7100. We'll continue talking politics while we get some folks lined up here to take a stab at those questions. Kim, were you surprised that there was not more of a fight about the debt limit increase, or was that just a given with what happened during the government shutdown in October?
Yeah, I think cooler heads prevailed. I think John Boehner and Mitch McConnell knew that their party took a beating with the government, with this government shutdown. They knew that they were not going to, first of all, the debt ceiling things were just fulfilling responsibilities to begin with. Boehner said from the beginning, he said, look, I would like to get some kind of a concession from the White House, from the Democrats. I didn't. Shutting down the government would be a crazy thing. And again, if you shut down the government, the attention once again turns to the Republican Party and their tactics. And the last thing the leadership wants is to focus on the Republican Party and not focus on the Democrats and the, you know, sensible problems with Obamacare. So the Tea Party is furious. There are so many groups out there just springing up, you know, constantly saying it's time to get rid of Boehner, time to get rid of Eric Cantor, the whole Republican leadership in the House. You might as well get rid of McConnell and Cornyn in the Senate, too, because they go along with Harry Reid more often than not, according to the Tea Party. And so there is anger in the conservative ranks, but ultimately, I think that for the Republican membership, even though what's fascinating about it, that Boehner brought up the debt ceiling vote in the House, and it was the 199 Republicans voted no. Just 28 Republicans voted yes. But of those 199 Republicans who voted no, almost all of them really appreciated the fact that Boehner brought it up. It passed. It's no longer an issue. So it's kind of a really remarkable thing to watch in Washington.
It was interesting. I was at a Matt Bevin event the other day. He had about 30 people in a restaurant. You know, they were all Tea Party folks. And he was talking about how, as he was going around the state to, like, Lincoln Day dinners and that sort of thing, I mean, he was finding hostile crowds. And, you know, it seems like in Kentucky, at least, in this Senate challenge, the party establishment has really rallied around McConnell. Is that going on elsewhere in some of these challenge states?
It absolutely is. I mean, a good example, well, the first primary coming up is March 4th, and that's in Texas. And Steve Stockman, who, you know, served a term during the Reagan, Gingrich Revolution of 1994, he came back in 2012. You think that in a state that has Ted Cruz and they're talking about secession and they're talking about all these things that Tea Party folks like, and given the fact that Cornyn is part of the leadership, you think that the Tea Party would be out to get him. But no, the entire Republican leadership in the state, aside from Ted Cruz, who's remaining neutral, the leadership is behind Cornyn in Kansas, where Pat Roberts, who's been in the Senate since 96, been in the House since 1980, and Congress since 1980, he may not even live in the state. He may have a Dick Lugar problem, and yet he's being challenged by a Tea Party guy, and the entire establishment is behind Pat Roberts. So as Mara was talking about earlier, you know, we saw these things with Dick Lugar in Indiana. We saw things with Mike Castle in Delaware, where the establishment may have backed them, but the Tea Party didn't like them. They got Tea Party conservatives winning the primaries instead, and the Republicans lost the seat in November, and they're very determined not to let that happen again. But in fairness to the Tea Party, in many of these states in the 2012 Senate races, in Hawaii, in Wisconsin with Tommy Thompson, in New Mexico, there were many establishment, thought to be very good establishment Republican candidates, and they lost too. So it's almost a little too simplistic to say that Tea Party nominees are the ones who will lose seats because Republican establishment figures have shown that they can lose it just as well.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. And Ken, you must have stumped folks because I'm not seeing a lot of activity here on your trivia question.
No, let's this point, is ridiculously hard. Even I had to look it up. Because,
and let's point because, out, you don't
actually,
have.
I thought I knew the answer early, and then I looked it up and said, wow, So I'm sure that the one that Howard knows is the governor's race.
Right, right.
And not the Senate race. Is that a fair guess?
That is correct.
And let's point out, you don't have to know. If you know one or the other, that's fine. 513-419-7100. The first part of that, the last Ohio governor besides John Kasich that was not born in the state of Ohio. And then the second part of the question, the last Ohio U.S. senator who was not born in the state of Ohio. 513-419-7100. With the debt limit increase now for, what, a year, I believe, was the extension there?
Correct, March 2015.
So does that take financial issues and debates off the agenda through at least, the first part of October?
Well, yeah, right, that's true. I mean, we'll talk about the budget again in September, and by September we'll be so immersed in the 2014 midterms that we may not be talking about what's going on in Washington at all. But the Republicans know that every time they have this battle over the budget in the last couple of years, it shows the divisions in the Republican Party, and they didn't want that. But ultimately, though, the fact that Boehner, and to a lesser extent McConnell, but Boehner pushed the vote on the debt ceiling means that he may not be able to go to the well anymore. In other words, he may not have the ability to push for an immigration overhaul vote, even though we thought that was going to happen not long ago. So I think that the Republicans say, look, you know, don't push us. We don't want to either encourage primaries from the right or encourage our Democratic opponents from the left. So let's just, you know, do nothing. I mean, Harry Truman, of course, talked about the do-nothing Congress in 1948. But in many ways, the Republicans would be very pleased if this to be called a do-nothing Congress, even though, for the record, they only control the House and not the Senate.
With there have been several long-serving Democratic congressmen who have announced that they're not going to seek re-election. And this week we heard Representative John Dingell of Michigan is going to retire after nearly 60 years in the House. And I think there's a possibility that his wife is going to run to replace him. Any surprise there that another long-serving Democrat is leaving, or are they reading the leaves that they're probably going to be out of power for a while and moving on?
Well, in fairness to Dingell and in fairness to Henry Waxman, I mean, Dingell is 87 years old. He's been around since 1955, the longest-serving member of Congress in history. So you could say that, well, you know, enough is enough. But it was interesting to me that Dingell, you know, I mean, he had a hand in almost everything in civil rights legislation, in environmental policy, in Affordable Care Act and health care policy. I mean, he was probably one of the most powerful and probably most feared members of Congress in history. In his heyday, you know, we talk about Chris Christie being a bully. There was no bigger bully in Congress than John Dingell for the longest time when he was chairman of the Energy and Commerce Committee. But at the same time, he talked about how he's leaving because it's so obnoxious to be in Congress, and yet he's pushing his wife to take his seat. So, I mean, is it too obnoxious for him, but it's okay for Debbie Dingell? It's kind of funny.
Maybe that way she can see what he's experienced for the last 60 years. Well, we've got some folks here that want to take a stab at your trivia question, and let's start out with Jay in Northside. Jay, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Was Jim Rhodes the last non-native Ohio governor?
Jim Rhodes was born, if memory serves, Jim Rhodes was born in Columbus. Now, Jim Rhodes is from Ohio.
No, he was born in Jackson County, Ohio.
All right, well, there's Jay's guess.
Colton.
Let's try Karen. Karen, go ahead. You have a guess on our trivia questions.
That would be Bob Taft. Bob was born in Boston, Massachusetts.
Bob Taft?
Now, that is the correct answer. And Karen's right, and she'll get a political junkie button for this. But isn't it, of all people, of all members, of all governors from Ohio, to be born outside of Ohio, it's a Taft. And when you think of Taft, I mean, Taft is just screaming the name Ohio, and yet Bob Taft was born in Boston, absolutely.
All right, well, congratulations, Karen, and if you'll hold the line, we'll get your information so we can get you your political junkie button.
Howard, you knew that, right?
No, you got me on that one, because I was thinking back to Mike DeSalle, who was born in New York City.
Mike DeSalle,
yeah.
Who lost to Jim Rhodes in 62, right?
Well, now, wait a minute. You had Robert Taft there written
down
on your
piece of
paper.
Well, I was thinking about the original Bob Taft for the Senate.
Okay. So you stumped Howard.
Right.
That's saying something.
Wow.
Very good.
Well,
I mean, we had Mara Liasson on and we stumped Howard. This is like the best show ever.
When we're talking about the, I heard Steve Roberts, political analyst on the midterms, and his analogy was that sometimes that he thought that the Democrats focus on the presidential election, and he compared that to like the Democrats were focusing on the Super Bowl, which would be the presidential races, the presidential years, but Republicans tend to focus on the games during the season, which, you know, he said were these midterm elections. Would you agree with that analogy?
Well, that may be the case when you have a Democrat in the White House. I think when you had a Republican in the White House, when you had Ronald Reagan in the White House, Democrats were focusing on the midterm elections, and they did very well in both 1982 and 1986, whereas, of course, Reagan won in 1980 and 1984. I think it always depends on what party is in the White House. But, I mean, I have a feeling that as excited as the Republicans are about 2014, and I'm not convinced they win the Senate, but they certainly have an opportunity to do it. They are excited about 2014. I think many of them just dreading 2016. Not that they don't want to run against Hillary Clinton, not that they don't think they could beat Hillary Clinton, but there's just so many divisions in the party between or among the Chris Christies and the Ted Cruzes and the Marco Rubios and the Rand Pauls and of course, you know, Rick Santorum is probably going to run again, and Rick Perry may run again, and who knows what Jeb Bush is doing. So, you know, once upon a time, it was Republicans would sit back and watch the Democrats eat their own. We saw that in 1984 when Reagan was running for second term, and he had, I mean, they called him the Seven Dwarfs. And I think when Pat Schroeder of Colorado was running, it was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. But they were talking about all these non-entities of Democrats running. But, you know, we've seen in the past, too, that non-entities could become entities very quickly. When George H.W. Bush, you know, won. When the U.S. triumphed in Operation Desert Storm in 1981, Bush had 89% approval ratings, higher than any Reagan, Kennedy, Johnson, Truman, FDR, higher than they ever got. And within a year, you know, and all the big-name Democrats refused to run, except maybe, you know, a few guys, and including this unknown governor from Arkansas, who wound up winning. So, you know, you could talk about right now how hopeless 2016 looks like for the Republicans in the presidential race, but, you know, we've got a long way to go.
But, I mean, you rattled off a whole lot of names of potential Republican presidential candidates, and you threw Rand Paul in there, too. I mean, what they're afraid of is that they're going to come up with somebody who can't beat Hillary Clinton, who is too extreme or too far to the right. Is that not correct?
Oh, that's absolutely correct. I think they fear a Ted Cruz more than they do a Rand Paul. Paul is doing what he can to basically calm some of the nervous people who think he may be a Ron Paul. And there are a lot of, look, you know, whatever you think about Ron Paul, and there was a big attraction to him in 2012, a little bit in 2008. There were some in the Ron Paul wing of the party who just, they just, it's not something that could possibly win a majority or anything close to a majority in a November general election. Rand Paul knows that. He's trying to reach out to more and more Republicans and sound more and more. Like, for example, the fact that Rand Paul is, you know, enthusiastically backing Mitch McConnell. Well, Ted Cruz is not doing that in Texas because Ted Cruz, if he wants to be an independent candidate and away from the establishment, he wants to put a pox on both parties, whereas Rand Paul may say that if I'm going to get anywhere with the Republican Party, I have to become a true Republican. And I think that's part of the calculation for Becky McConnell.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking politics with political junkie Ken Rudin, and we're going to continue that conversation in just a moment. This is 91.7 WVXU. This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson and political junkie Ken Rudin with us today as we talk politics once a month. You can join our conversation 513-419-7100 or email talk at WVXU.org. You'll also find us on Facebook and Twitter, 513-419-7100. Ken had thrown out two trivia questions, and we got the first one about the last governor not born in the state of Ohio. And we'll give it just about five more minutes here on the other one if you think you know the last Ohio U.S. senator who was not born in the state. And this may be a double stump because I don't think Howard knows this one either. So, Ken, this may be a very good day for you.
Well, it's not good if it's so out of the realm of possibility that nobody gets it. You know, you try to think, I think I know it, but sometimes...
Those are fair questions.
Can you, maybe this would help. Is there a hint that you can give without giving it away?
Is there a hint? Yes, I will tell you, okay, this is a hint. He was once, before he was senator, he was a mayor. Oh, that's a great hint, Ken.
Oh.
Now, did that do it, Howard?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you... if you think you can take... Again, we'll give it about five more minutes. If not, we'll let Howard guess. 513-419-7100. But Howard, since you're an employee of the station, you cannot get a political junkie button.
That's right.
I'm sorry. Ken, what about this IRS regulation of political activities by tax-exempt groups? The House took a vote on that yesterday to delay those regulations for a year, and from what I heard reporting yesterday on NPR, that if it indeed passed, it would run into a veto threat from President Obama.
Well, the question about the IRS and political activities has really been a hot button. I mean, it's interesting that Obama would veto it, and that's the case. But there are just folks on the right who just feel that this is part of a campaign of intimidation against conservative groups. We saw this with the IRS from the beginning. And while, you know, there has been fallout, and President Obama said that, you know, I'll get to the bottom of this, and one of the top people in the IRS was, you know, pled the Fifth Amendment, Lois Lerner. It's just become part of the campaign against campaign against the White House regarding the use of government agencies to stifle dissent. So the Republican Congress has really been pushing against that, and it's just part of the distrust between the two parties.
Anything too we can take away from this past weekend's meetings with the governors in the nation's capital?
Well, there was something very interesting. I mean, here's the thing, you know. Usually we decide that, you know, Congress is finished. There's no hope for Congress. There's not going to get anything done. The real hope is in the governors. Usually when the president meets the National Governors Association, it's not a bunch of politics. But several things happened last week which were interesting. First, on the Thursday before the weekend meeting, President Obama met with the Democratic governors, and he lit into the Republican governors, saying that they're, you know, they're really hurting the poor, hurting the disadvantaged, and it's a big deal. Then you saw a bunch of interviews with Bobby Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, who may or may not be looking at 2016 for run for president, and he said that, you know, I'm just livid with this. So after on Monday or so, when Obama met with the governors, and then they came out on the White House driveway, Bobby Jindal just did not hold his hostility or his anger, and just said that, you know, the administration is waving the white flag, that the minimum wage is not the answer, that they're really ruining this country. And then Daniel Malloy, who's a until now an unknown governor of Connecticut, attacked Jindal, saying this is the most insane thing I've ever heard, and you guys are starting it, and you're partisan, and we're not, and yeah, and it went back and forth. And, you know, once upon a time, as I said, the governors were supposed to be the hope of sanity in this country. But with such partisanship on both sides of the aisle everywhere now, even the governors were not immune to it.
And looks like maybe your hint was what we needed on the trivia question here. We've got some folks lined up. Again, we're looking for the last Ohio U.S. Senator not born in Ohio. And first up, we're going to give Roger a chance to take a guess. Roger, go ahead.
My guess is Howard Metzenbaum.
Howard Metzenbaum.
Well, Howard Metzenbaum was not a mayor, but he was born in Ohio. I think he was born in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that takes care of Roger. Thanks for calling in, Roger. And let's try Gail calling from Price Hill. Gail, go ahead.
Well, that was my guess.
Uh-oh.
Too, was Howard Metzenbaum.
So not Howard Metzenbaum. Appreciate that, Gail. And let's try...
Can I just say one thing quickly?
Sure.
Remember when Howard Metzenbaum first ran for the Senate in 1970, it was just when he was first running in early 70, it was right after the New York Mets won the World Series in that shocking upset in 1969. Button said, "I'm a Mets fan, M-E-T-Z."
Right,
baseball thing.
Yeah.
Well, if we could get you and Howard sidetracked into baseball, we won't do that. Let's try Frank from Amelia. Frank, go ahead.
Sorry, I've looked up my own answer and it's wrong, Mark Hanna. So sorry to waste your time.
All right, thanks for that.
It's more recent than Mark Hanna, I'll tell you that.
Okay, I think we got one more person here. Let's try Jim in Fort Thomas. Jim, go ahead.
Thank you. I was hoping we could go all the way back to Henry B. Payne from Hamilton, New York, I believe.
Wow, who's that?
That is going back.
And since you don't know that, that must not be the right answer, Ken.
He's not the most recent, no.
All right.
Okay,
Jim, thanks for trying. I'll tell you what, let's give Howard a shot here, and then if Howard's right, then we'll move on. Go ahead,
all
Howard.
All right, I'm not quite sure about this. But I'd say Frank Lausche.
Frank Lausche is a good guess because he was former mayor, but Frank Lausche was born in Ohio.
Okay. The only other
ready
one.
For the answer?
Well, he's going to. Let me have one more
The
guess.
Only other one I've got is Voinovich.
Nope. Voinovich was born in Ohio as well.
You've stumped Howard twice in one day.
Yeah. You're amazing,
this
Ken.
This is not really a fair question because it is a tough one, but it's kind of interesting to know how many. I mean, going back so far, so long, you know. 70 years, 80 years since there's been a senator born outside of Ohio. But the last one was former Cleveland Mayor Harold Burton.
Uh-huh.
He was elected in 1940, and he left in 1945 to become a member of the Supreme Court.
Yes.
He was born in Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts.
Very good.
All right. Well,
he later married Elizabeth Taylor. No, that was a different Burton, I think. Yeah.
We found out today that 8 cities have submitted bids to the Republican National Committee to host the 2016 convention. 3 of them are here in Ohio, Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Columbus. Other contenders, Dallas, Denver, Kansas City, Las Vegas, and Phoenix. With 3 Ohio cities in the running, how likely or possible is it that the Republican convention could be in Ohio, especially considering Ohio is a swing state?
Well, yes, Ohio is a swing state, and we always talk about that no president, no Republican has ever been elected president without winning Ohio. But ultimately, it really doesn't matter. I don't think it matters where the convention is held as far as election possibilities. In other words, when Ronald Reagan and the Republicans met in Detroit, mm-hmm. it was more of a symbol saying that we care about the inner cities, not that we're going to win the state. But I think what it just seems like it basically they're looking for cities that would have great hotel space and attract a lot of people and things like that and be an exciting place to be in the summer. So there's no reason why I've been to Columbus many times. I've been to Cincinnati a few times. There's a great cities to visit. There's great hotel rooms, and I they can always say it has a lot to do with Ohio winning in November, and of course Obama won Ohio, and the Republicans would love to win it back. But it all depends on how much hotel room there is and how attractive the city is. I know there's tremendous debate over Las Vegas because that's always a fun place to be, but the thought of conservative Christian Republicans, wandering around the streets in Las Vegas at 4 in the morning might be a little scary.
Yes, I don't see that happening. But, I mean, I've been to a lot of these things, Democrat and Republican, and I agree with you. I've yet to see one where I thought that there was a real advantage because of the location that the political party picked up out of it. But, you know, Ohio is, you know, and Cincinnati is a swing city in a critical state.
Well, they're thinking of doing Boston in honor of Bob Taft being born there.
Yeah.
No, but really, I mean, you think of 2004, the Republicans went to New York City. Obviously, they went there in the aftermath of 9/11. Right. Not that they were going to win New York in November, but they wanted to send a signal. So
sending
signals is a lot different than winning the state in November. But, you know, Ohio has a tremendous amount of poignancy to pick a state like Ohio, which is so crucial to their plans for winning the presidential election.
And Democrats went to Boston that year,
right? And I think, and as I recall,
a state with the, they were not going to lose,
because I was at a Yankees Red Sox game during the convention, and John Kerry was there, who was the 2004 nominee from Boston, and he was booed at Fenway Park. So you know, be careful what you wish for.
Right.
This week, Ohio Governor John Kasich delivered his State of the State address. A lot of it, Howard even, I think, wrote this was sort of the kickoff to the governor's race here in Ohio this year, and both the Republican and the Democrat will be unopposed I guess there is a candidate
There's
in the
a,
Democratic primary.
Marginal candidate.
There was some polling that showed Governor Kasich with a 5-point lead over Ed Fitzgerald in the governor's race. Any thoughts on the Ohio race thus far, Ken?
I think those numbers are accurate. In my Political Junkie column a few weeks ago, I rated all the, I did something about rating all the governors, and I have Kasich as leaning to likely Republican, and I think that's accurate. There was a time not that long ago, a couple of years ago, where his numbers were really, really poor. You know, when he's taking on the unions and things like that shortly after he was elected in 2010. But his numbers have rebounded. The economy has rebounded. And you could credit or blame anyone you want for a changing of the economy. You could say it's Obama's, credit Obama or credit Kasich. But governors will always take credit when the economy is doing really well. And so, I mean, look at California. You know, Jerry Brown inherited a total mess. And now they have billions of dollars surplus, which nobody in their right minds ever thought was possible. And now there's no Republican opposition at all to Jerry Brown. There's going to be much more competitive race in Ohio. But I think Kasich, you know, he's reached out. He's battled. He has even had some battles with conservatives in his own party. And he's certainly more moderate than he sounded in 2010. And right now, I would say if I was a betting man, I'd say that he went to second term. And then, of course, Kasich is among those Republicans, and perhaps Rob Portman is on that list as well, who are clearly looking at 2016.
Yes. We had an email from Bill asking that to ask your thoughts on Kasich running for president in 2016.
Well, you know, we keep saying that, you know, or the Republicans keep saying that the way to go is governors, and you do have a bunch of very interested governors. You have Chris Christie, you have Scott Walker of Wisconsin, and that may be it. But Kasich did run for president once before. I mean, 9 people remember that, but, I mean, he clearly wanted it. Back then, he was a member of the House.
He couldn't even get 10 people to remember that.
And,
I remember.
Okay, 11 people. And, he clearly wanted it. And it didn't go the way he wanted, but you know, he may try again. Look, Sam, the story about Kansas's Sam Brownback, he also ran for president as a pretty backbench of a senator. Then he left the Senate to become a governor because he feels that's where the power is. And there's some talk that he's thinking about 2016 as well. So it seems like right now, with Congress's numbers being so awful, the way to go is, if you're going to be in office, be a governor. And being a successful governor, now we could talk about whether it's important or not to have the convention in a key state or not, but it is very important when you think of Ohio governor running for president, and not many of them have done it. I mean, Jim Rhodes was a favorite son, but for the most part, you don't see that. But
and Kim,
when
we're
you come from Ohio, you come from a powerful state like that, and you're serious about running for president, you have a lot of, and you have a lot of a strong party behind you. These are not candidates who should be dismissed.
And, Ken, we're going to leave it there. We've been talking politics and elections with political junkie Ken Rudin, and you'll find links to his website and his podcast at WVXU.org. And, again, our thanks to NPR's national political correspondent Mara Liasson for joining us earlier in the show. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available on our website. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our technical director was Bruce Ellis. With Howard Wilkinson, I'm Jay Hanselman.